Hey, this is John Lee Dumas of the award-winning podcast, Entrepreneurs on Fire, and you're listening to the Excelsior Journeys with George Soroy. Prepare to ignite.
So would you say that that's kind of like the lightning bolt moment for
you? And that's
why
I taught myself how to draw, was actually the Little Mermaid, drawing stills of Ariel.
I've got better things to do tonight than die.
Sylvester jumped out of his chair and said, who the F is this?
I remember walking out of the theater with him saying, I'm going to write Halloween.
I'm rather impressed with your research. Rarely do people ask me about Children in the Corn.
It doesn't have to be perfect. Just do it. You know, throw some spaghetti against a wall. See if it sticks.
This is George Soroy saying to all of you, ever upward.
Welcome back to Excelsior Journeys, the road to creativity, part of the Podmatch Podcast Network. This is George Soroy, and thank you so much for being here. And as we are getting into 2026, one of the things that we're always looking to do is we're looking to not only better ourselves as one of our New Year's resolutions, but also one of the things that we are doing, especially us creatives and especially us authors, is that we are saying, this is the year I'm finally going to do the thing. This is the year I'm finally going to finish the book. This is the year I'm going to be a published author. This is the year that everything is going to be put out there for all the world to see. And I would say that if that is your journey, if that is your resolution, if that is what you intend to make happen, then you need to take a look at Adele Royce's website as your template for 2026, because Adele has already fashioned herself as one hell of a voice in writing. She has two different series that are out there right now. She has her books Camera Ready, its prequel Princess Smile, and its sequel For Position Only. And she has just recently released her book Summer's Blood and is preparing for its sequel Slipper Girl to be coming out later this year. It is very exciting to take a look at her website to see how she has gone from advertising and PR to owning her own marketing consulting firm and still being able to get these books out there. That is the perfect example of what this show is all about. It's all about putting the spotlight on people that are still able to push forward with their creative ventures while still maintaining everything that they do to keep themselves afloat in real life. And judging by what I've been seeing from Adele's work, she is not only surviving, she is thriving. And I'm really excited to have her here as my guest this week. So it is my pleasure to introduce Adele Royce. Adele, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you, George. Thanks for that beautiful introduction. And thanks especially for having me on your show.
Thank you so much for reaching out. It's been a pleasure having you on here. And I am so happy to get into more details on your own journey. And if I'm not mistaken, we found each other through Podmatch. Am I right?
We absolutely did. And I was very excited when you wrote back and said, yeah, come on the show.
Yeah. I mean, just by looking at everything you've been doing, I just knew that this was an ideal guest to have on. So I'm really excited to have you on here. Yet another success story with Podmatch, because I've been using Podmatch for over 5 years now, and it's been a wonderful experience working with that site, getting to know Alex and working with Alex now as part of the Podmatch Podcast Network. So there are exciting times ahead, and I'm excited to have you here to talk about your work.
Thank you. Yeah, I know Podmatch is the best. They're like so responsive and wonderful. So I share your opinion of them.
Oh, yeah. And so before we get into your own origin story, if you will, your own road to creativity, tell us a little bit about the latest book that's out there now, Summer's Blood.
So Summer's Blood is the first book in the Neon Diaries, which is the series, the latest series. And basically, I took the original series, the final book of that series, what's called Truth, Lies, and Love in Advertising. And I took the protagonist of For Position Only, who was, I felt like I just wasn't through with his story. But I didn't want the new series to be focused on the central conflict of the relationship, because Truth, Love, Lies, and Love in Advertising is all about the relationship of these two people, Craig and Jane. And I thought, I cannot torture these two any longer. I mean, they're going to get a little torture in Summer's Blood.
Right.
Because what is fiction without the drama, of course? But I changed the genre and I thought, what if this happened? And what if this incredible, painful issue in this guy, Craig Keller's soul, is brought out into the light and there's a way for him to resolve all of this conflict? And that's where it led me to a very interesting mystery. And literally, I did not set out to make it a mystery thriller. That's what it turned into because of the story and its characters. So Summer's Blood starts this sort of odyssey in Las Vegas, which I lived and worked in Las Vegas in marketing and PR for 15 years of my career.
Wow.
I had a very exciting...
In Vegas, no less.
In Vegas. And so I thought, I had not written about Vegas. My first three books were set in Los Angeles, which is where I was born and raised. But I thought, you know what? I've been out of Las Vegas for a long enough time. Let me use that as a setting and a backdrop for this story. And because I know the industry, because I worked for big casino companies in marketing there, I knew, and of course, I write what I know. I'm one of those authors who can pepper in to the story, advertising and marketing. And now I'm like in the casino industry. So nice. Summer's Blood started that whole Vegas thing. And honestly, it's just been a lot of fun to create the stories that are happening in that city and drawing on a lot of my own knowledge of that business is fun.
Nice. Very cool. And that's a great example of writing what you know, and then taking those experiences and creating the world around your story. And that's one of the things that too many people don't think about. They think about, when it comes to writing what they know, just doing like an autobiographical or memoir type of story that focuses on their life, their experiences, and that's it. But what you're doing is you're able to take that experience of being there and using that as the backdrop for where the story is going to be taking place.
Absolutely. And I get that question a lot. You know, people who read the books and say, oh, you were in marketing in Las Vegas. Did this ever happen to you? Or like, what's the headline that you took out of all your experience there? And honestly, I don't do that. What I do is I have these characters who have been books long. They've been developed over time. I add new ones in. And once I have the characters and with a story, then you can take a fictionalized character and you can throw them into a situation, and just understanding the business of marketing and the business of what it's like in Las Vegas, what it's like to work in a casino environment. And you can drop them into these situations and know that they could actually happen. That maybe it didn't happen, but it could happen because of the knowledge of the business. So I try to have fun with that. And
absolutely.
And, right? Because you want it to be plausible.
Mm-hmm. There was one thing that it actually reminds me of, something that I did with one of my previous books, because my own young adult sci-fi trilogy is dealing with someone who is a god in human form. He has a very important mission that he needs to do, but it's got to be on the top floors of Rockefeller Center in New York City. And I used to work there at Top of the Rock. That was my last job there in New York City before I made the move over to St. Louis. So I was able to really get a good layout of everything. And I said, when I was up there, just like, I want to see a sword fight on the 70th floor. That would be awesome, because you have this all open area and it's so cool and everything. And you have these two characters just going at it and the whole area is cleared away. So they have all this space to work with, and it's all in this great 360 degree angle. But then it stopped me, because I was just like, how do I get the sword up there? Because my main character, he's a god in human form and everything, but he's not going to just fly up there. He needs to go through security. How's he going to get the sword up there? And one of my friends that I work with, and I will forever be grateful to her for this, because she said there could be an event up there. And I was just like, oh my God, you are so right. Because if you do an event, you're not going through security. You're just going around, and then you're taking it up there. And once I did that, then it just led to one idea leading to another, which led to another. I knew the area. I knew the layout of everything. And it was just like, how do I get it up there? How do I get that sword up there at that time up there? And I hope that as time passed, they kind of added their own level of security up there just to be a little extra cautious. Once that was suggested to me, then it just opened up a whole world of possibilities because I was able to get past that sticking point that I would have had. And it adds that extra element that helps.
That's so interesting because that story is exactly what I do. and yeah. Your sword that you couldn't get up there because that detail would have bothered you. It may not bother mm-hmm. anyone else, but I do the same exact thing. And you're visualizing all of this, right? And you're like, okay, mm-hmm. if they're going to be up here and this is going to be happening, how are we going to make sure, for example, I have this big scene in Summer's Blood that takes place in a very high roller suite in the top of the hotel. And I'm like, okay, all this commotion is going on. Like, where are the other people? Aren't they going to hear it? Oh, well, maybe he put the other suite out of order so that for us as authors, it's plausible. It makes sense. There's no gap. There's no hole in the story. And yep. even if it only means something to us, it's just, that's very important. What you just said, part of my books. Is that plausibility?
Yeah. It adds that verisimilitude. And that's something
exactly.
That,
it's verisimilitude. That
too many people,
yes.
Too many people look past. Exactly. So with your own writing history, let's go back to the beginning of all of that, because one of the things I love to hear about is what I call the road to creativity. And that's where you're on this one path. And then all of a sudden you either experience something or you read something, meet someone, hear something. And it just makes you want to go, oh, I want to do that. And then all of a sudden you're getting on the exit ramp. You're on a whole other road. You merge into traffic and there you are. You're on this whole other path. So what was it that got you on that exit ramp in the first place?
I always was a writer. I always wrote. I wrote for a living. I wrote. I was an English major. I wrote as a child. I just was always a writer. But mm-hmm. I never really had the freedom to be a creative writer. And so when I started experimenting with a manuscript or stories, I think I just started writing stories, and some of the stories were true, but then I was like, oh, I should fictionalize some of this stuff and see where that ends up. So I'd say probably within the last 15 years, I started to get serious about creative writing, but it wasn't until I moved from the crazy chaotic world of casino marketing in Las Vegas my husband and I went to Miami, and I was considering what I was going to do with my career, really. Like, am I going to continue working for hospitality? There were a lot of opportunities that came up there, but then I decided to switch sides, and switching sides and being a part of the creative agency side. So when I was working in the casino marketing area, I was the client. I was managing advertising and PR agencies. Once I switch sides, suddenly I have clients, and they're all kind of different clients. But to be totally honest, having that free up of sort of picking and choosing clients, working on the projects that I really wanted to work on in my day job, gave me the opportunity to think about what I wanted to write about. And that was the birth of the Truth, Lies, and Love and Advertising series. I wrote Princess Smile was the first manuscript. I published it last because it probably needed the most work. But I found writers organization in South Florida, which had a fiction critique group. And all of the studying that I'd done through just conferences and webinars, it's like, you need a critique group. You need somebody else to read your writing. And that was really how I found this great group. And I had them read my manuscript. It was awful. It needed a lot of work, but a lot of folks don't understand that there's a craft of writing a novel, right? You know this because mm-hmm. you write novels, but it's not just you sit there and write a bunch of chapters and it keeps going and going. No, there's got to be that arc. There's got to be the beginning, middle, and end. There's all of these things that we learn as authors. Some of us, it comes to us naturally. I always had a really good natural pacing to my work, but I still needed to learn. I needed to learn the craft of writing a novel. And that's how I started. Mm-hmm. And I just kept going because Princess Smile, I finished it. And then I was like, well, I don't know what I want to do with this book yet, whether I want to self-publish it, whether I want to find an agent. So I was going through all that. So I thought, you know what? I'm not ready to say goodbye to these characters. So I wrote Cameron. You probably went through this with your trilogy, right? You just don't want to say goodbye. You're like, hey, so then I wrote Camera Ready, and then I wrote Four Position Only. And sometime around the pandemic, I just decided I didn't want them to sit in my computer any longer. I just wanted to get them out there.
Nice.
And so I published them, Camera Ready, Four Position Only. And then after I did some real work on Princess Smile, I published that one last. And it was, so that's really kind of how I got in, because you've written full length novels. As it becomes addictive. Doesn't it?
When you've gotten into that rhythm, then it feels addictive. It feels like, oh, because then all of a sudden one thing is going to lead to another change, which leads to another change. And then you find yourself broadening these characters and getting them a little bit more mature. And yes. Now all of a sudden they're starting to dictate the pace as they go. And now all of a sudden they're getting a little bit more mouthy. Now it's just like, now they're teenagers. They think that they know everything, that they're all set to get out there into the world on their own. But it takes a little bit longer before you can finally say, okay, you've gotten to where you need to be. Now it's time for you to go out into the world.
And it's so funny because I can sit, like, the process of putting a book out, because I have a new one coming in a couple months, it feels mm-hmm. like you're having a baby. And it feels yeah. like, to your point, you're in the longer gestational period. You're in labor for a long time, right? And it can be really mm-hmm. painful. But once it's out there, then you just said it perfectly. It's like you're bringing up the child into the world. You got to do it right. You got to put mm-hmm. your marketing behind it. You've got to make sure that it's out in the world and that it's going to grow up and be something. And yeah. seeing your creativity out in the world is quite something, isn't it?
That is what's really intoxicating. That's what's really addictive, because after going through the whole process, and really quickly, you went the indie route for this, right?
I had a publisher in LA for the first three books. And then Summer's Blood was my first self-published book. I published it under my company name. So these books are all, I work with a publishing partner, not an imprint, but yeah, I'm an indie all the way now.
Nice. And were you able to get the rights back for your previous books and then launch them under your own, or are they still with that publisher?
They're with that publisher until we don't want to do that anymore, but they were great people. They are great people. I just wanted to do this differently. I wanted to see what it was like. I'm a marketer by trade, but marketing books, as we know, is so different from marketing other things. It's mm-hmm. something that I had to learn, and it's been trial by error, but I really do like the freedom of having that independent publishing process. I just feel it's like you said, it's like you can be really creative. If you want to change something down the line, you can pull it down and put it back up, and it's not a big drama. But yeah, that could change. I mean, I don't know. I feel I love to be an independently published author. I think it gives us a lot of freedom.
But what you have right now is the best of both worlds, because you have these books that are 100% under your control. You chose the look of it. You chose the cover. You chose how it's to be described, all of that. And you're doing great with that. And then over here, you have a team that is investing in you. And that, to me, is what really made me go, that's what I need to latch myself onto. And so that's what led me to go from indie to traditional publishing. And now I have my two Excelsior books. Part three is in development right now. And then I have From Parts Unknown, which has been refashioned into a trilogy instead of a five-part serial. And now that's getting ready for its relaunch. And both of them are with my new publisher. And it feels like I got a team behind me. So that's something that's very gratifying to me. Everyone's got their own direction. And the great thing about publishing, especially these days, is that there's more than one way to do it. And it really just, at the end of the day, it's what is it that you want to accomplish with that? You had the feeling of maintaining that control yourself. And so you, eventually your plan is just to continue on as an indie publisher, correct?
I mean, unless something changes and I meet the right group and I want to go and do something like that again. I mean, I welcome all of it. I honestly, I just love the process of being able to do this And as long as I have ideas and as long as I can get the story right, I have a theory about putting books and creativity out in the world. Since somebody told me this, you're writing for your readers. Let's say you have 5 readers to start with. They love you and they cannot wait for the next book. And it's about nurturing those readers and expanding that readership. But if I'm writing for 5, 100, 1,000, 10, I'm writing for people who want my books and seeing reviews and getting notes from people or having somebody come up and say, I loved that book. It's just such an amazing feeling. So I don't always think about like how it got there. I think about like where it is and how I can do my best to get it into the right people's hands who really like this genre, who really like this type of story. And that is on me as a marketing person and somebody who is looking out there and listening to what people say and knowing who my readership is. And I think that's probably my biggest objective is the readership. If a publisher came up to me, a traditional publisher came up to you tomorrow and said, oh my gosh, I want your next book. Well, I'd be talking to him. I'd be like, yeah, let's have a conversation.
That to me is the best way to do it. Just keeping all channels open, just keeping all possibilities open and seeing what is the ideal fit for that particular story. In case of From Parts Unknown, it had been with me for a lot of years. And it went from an initial idea of a video game to a treatment to a script to many drafts of that script. And then the novelization of that script from 2001 to 2002. And then releasing it on my own during that time, which is highly not recommended because that was before the Kindle. That was before any sort of real self-publishing was possible other than Ex Libris, which was a terrible, terrible business model. Back in 2001, they had a book called Publishing Science Fiction, and they gave one paragraph to self-publishing saying, don't do it. It is the worst thing you could possibly do for yourself as an author. It will kill your career. You will never be taken seriously. It's a last-ditch effort for anyone to get their work out. You have to pay to get yourself published over and over and over again. And then what do we have 8 years later? The Complete Idiot's Guide to self-publishing. So it's amazing what happens as a result of that. But what I truly love, and this is something that's been a wild ride, is taking that initial novelization and then completely blowing it up and turning it into a 5-part serial. And when I say blow it up, it went from just over 230 pages to a collective of over 600 pages. Wow. It's the same story, but just so many new elements that were put in there because I had the freedom to do it because it was my story and no one else had it at that time. And then getting it ready and getting it out there was wonderful just as a 5-part serial, but then having ideas for different things going forward with it and trying to kind of jumpstart it again into relevancy. That was when my agent said, why don't we reach out to the publisher that we already have Excelsior with, they'll be open to listening to it. I can go ahead and pitch that for you. And I said, well, that's great because I actually have an idea for a board game that can go with it and just kind of use it as a little bit of additional merchandise and add an extra fun element to that whole universe. She followed it up with, okay, you need to be in there on the pitch meeting then because I can't pitch all this on my own. And sure enough, I did it, and they not only took the book, but they're also taking the game. So, and have ideas for other things, other elements going forward. So, again, that's one of those things that I could not have done on my own. I needed these guys to do it. I needed a team to invest in me. And so that was my end game, just like everyone else has their own end game about maintaining control or collecting 100% of all the profits and everything. And there are different ways for so many different people.
So many different ways. And I love how your idea for the board game just came with, I mean, those are the types of ideas and whatever is like appropriate for your audience and your genre. Mm-hmm. That is like the smartest way to be marketing your creative work. It really is.
And it's fun. And it's fun.
It is fun.
Coming up with different ideas like that. But at the end of the day, the one thing that will always be the be all and end all, and this is whether you've gone the indie route, whether you've gone the traditional route, whatever the case, it's when all the work is finished, when everything has been taken care of, and there you are, it's just you and the finished book that you're holding in your hands. You've had that experience now four different times. You're about to have it a fifth time. It never gets old, does it?
No, it never gets old. It's always exciting. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of different emotions attached to putting a new book out into the world. And it's very exhilarating. And then hearing mm-hmm. what people think and hearing like their thoughts and getting people excited about the story, because somebody's read the whole series and they're like, where's the next one? I have people like that and readers like that. And that's really exciting. Really? Yeah, I'm excited to get this book out. This book actually came really fast to me. And it was a quicker, I wrote it in a shorter amount of time than I wrote Summer's Blood. Summer's Blood took me 5 years because I really didn't know what I was doing with that genre. And I mm-hmm. needed to master that genre. And mm-hmm. once I was like, this is it, I'm not going to read this again and done with it. But I was already writing Slipper Girl. I know, right? It's like, you're like, do you ever get to that? I mean, I know you get to the point where you cannot read it again until it's mm-hmm. in print. And you're like, okay, yeah. And I can't do anything else to this.
And that's where you normally pick a few things where you're just like, damn it, I should have done this.
I know.
You're talking to someone who's about to go into the fourth printing of his own book, and he still finds like little, tiny little things that need a little bit of a course correction here and there.
Do you find it's more like in dialogue, or is it in like actual plot, or what are you finding?
Funny thing is with the first Excelsior book, it's gone through when the initial version of it, the self-published version, came out in 2010. That's when I saw all the mistakes, everything that could have been fixed. And then when it got picked up by a small press and they said that I could go back and make some adjustments, I went nuts with it. I was just like, okay. Characters originally were not able to communicate telepathically. Now they can. Like, I George Lucas the hell out of this thing. And it was fun to do it because now I was making it tie into the sequel that I had already started writing. And it made the process a whole lot easier. And then I reached out to my editor and I said, we've been focusing on this sword that Excelsior owns and it's modeled after Excalibur. What if it really is Excalibur? And then that opened things up. And able to kind of drop in little hints about that. And then just beefing up some parts and switching out some other parts, taking every inch, every little bit of profanity out so that way it would reach a younger audience and having fun with that. And then all of a sudden it gets picked up by a different publishing house when the small press decided to close a shop. And they said, can we have our editor take a crack at it? They not only took a crack at it, they took a sledgehammer to it. And it was, and there was so much that needed to be patched up. But everything that was suggested just made it better and better and better. And then in 2022, I was able to offer the story up to a group on Clubhouse that was looking to do audio dramas. And they let me adapt that book into an audio drama. And we were able to take something that took 7 hours to read as an audiobook and condense the whole thing into 2 hours. And when you do that, you're opening things up to basically you're adapting your own work, which is something that I recommend any author do because you're going to learn so much about the process because everyone wants to yeah, if they always say like, oh, I want my books to become movies, but I don't want them to touch a thing. It's like, you're going to learn that there is a lot that's expendable when you make that leap from book to the screen. And in my case, it was book to audio. And so I had to reduce it even more because now I couldn't rely on anything that people could see. It was simply dialogue, sound effects. That's all I had to work with. And it opened things up to a much more freeing experience by doing that because I was the one doing it. I was the one making those decisions. And one of the things was I took a major character who was male, made it a female. And it wound up creating a whole other dynamic. And it opened things up for my voice actress, Erica Harvey, to absolutely crush that role. And she had gone on record saying it was the favorite, her most favorite role that she's ever done. And like those sort of things, they don't happen if you don't allow yourself that freedom to really kind of open things up and see where things can go. And so now if that were ever to make the jump from book to screen, I have a template to work with as with that audio drama script. So who knows? Like it can go anywhere. It can really go anywhere.
You are really well positioned to move that into screen because it's funny because I get comments on all my books. They're like, oh, this should be a series. I've had people write reviews and say, oh, I could see this on Netflix. Okay, great. But that is a science to take a novel and to put it into a screenplay. And I absolutely have no experience doing that. I would have to learn to do that. And now I would love to do that. But it is a day's work there because you're going to have to cut out. I mean, it's your plot, dialogue, sound, lighting. I mean, you're like the director of your own thing and it's got to be a certain length. Most, it's got like 90 minutes you have. Yeah, there's a whole formula to that business.
Originally, I had just an hour. But and I can only get it as far as 80 pages because 60 pages would have done it. But I could not squeeze any more out of it than 80 pages. And I just thought, my own naivete, that, oh, we'll just pick up the pace for these last 20 pages and everything will be fine. No, we had to kept on working at it. And then finally the producer just said, okay, we'll make it 2 hours and we'll record it over two Sundays instead of one Sunday. And we did it. And it was with a full cast. It was with a sound effects library. It was with a musical score and it was all live. Both parts.
We did live.
It was live audio drama. It was so much rehearsing, and it was working with people all around the world, and it was wonderful. It was absolutely a wonderful experience, and I can't get enough of talking about that. It was such a joy to be able to see that through, and to work with people that are still friends to this day. Which is great because they really want to do the sequel. And so now it's just like, I want to finish up the book trilogy first, and then I can go back and adapt part two into a full audio drama. But now it's just like, I'm watching all those amazing voice actors and they're getting more and more success. They're getting representation. They're booking other roles. They're doing this, they're doing that. They're getting nominated for awards and just like, you guys are going to be too expensive when it's time to do the sequel. So it's, I don't want to get too off track here because we're talking about your work, but that's something that I truly love, talking about. And that's something I recommend any author do is take that initiative and adapt their own work to a different format.
No, you're inspiring me. So this is great. Love to hear. And I can only imagine how cool it is to watch your own work come to life in that manner. Even just having a voice actor do my audiobooks, that's exciting to me. Oh my goodness. They caught the emotion of that scene or they caught something maybe I didn't intend. And it does bring your book to life in any way. It's cool.
Yeah. I mean, the majority of the characters that were in, a handful of those characters, go back with me all the way back to 1992. Until then, my voice was the only voice I heard from those characters. So now all of a sudden I have all these other people that are taking it and running with it and kicking so much ass with it. It's a great experience. So again, something I'd recommend to any author. But getting back to your books, when all was said and done, what was that moment when you held up the first book that you would ever publish in your hands?
The moment that I had, it was camera ready and it was my first book. And it's almost indescribable just seeing it and feeling it and opening the pages. And I think I sat down and read it. And of course, then I found a bunch of things that I wanted to change. But yep. No, it is, there's something just exhilarating. And only other authors would know that feeling, because it really is quite an accomplishment. Whatever you're mm-hmm. writing, whether it's nonfiction, fiction, memoir, whatever it is, you have a book in your hand. That's a body of work that only you were able to create, because your mm-hmm. uniqueness created that story or piece of work. And no, it's an exhilarating feeling.
It really is. And the second best thing when it comes to being a writer, the first best is holding that finished copy in your hands. The second one is playing at the launch party. And what was your launch party like?
My first launch party for Camera Ready was, I did an online event, because again, it was during the pandemic, and because literally the book came out in August of 2020, and we can mm-hmm. all remember what we were doing in those early months. But I did have a launch party on Zoom, and we talked about the book. We talked to each other. We gave away prizes. We mailed them out to the people who won. But it was a very fun, touching experience that involved a lot of friends, family, people who had supported me, people in my writing critique circle. It was just a wonderful, supportive experience. I never did that type of thing again, but I really, really am thinking about doing it for Slipper Girl, because it's been quite a few years that I've done something fun like that. Or I could invite a lot of people to just enjoy and celebrate it. Yeah.
Have you thought about a specific theme to kind of go along with the story itself?
With Slipper Girl, well, I can tell you, it's a spine-tingling thriller. I mean, this one is, I would call it darker than Summer's Blood. I always have an element of humor, because I have to have comic relief, whether it's with my characters or whatever it is.
Of course.
Things get very, very tense. But this story is about a woman who, she is in Summer's Blood. She's 17 in that book. In the new book, she's 27. So 10 years have gone by between Summer's Blood and Slipper Girl. And it's really about a woman who is, she's got a terrible secret. And she's the head of marketing at her father's big casino in Las Vegas. And she is a very smart, she's worked really hard to get to where she is. But suddenly her estranged mother, who comes from Amsterdam, knows the secret. And she's sort of threatening everything. And my main character, her name is Skylar Van Ness, and she's figuring out how she's going to get out of this and not take her father's business down and not ruin her own reputation. It's a deep, dark secret, but it's coming back and she's got to figure it out. And it really becomes an odyssey in its own right. When I think about themes, one of the biggest themes in my books, which is the family saga, I am very fascinated by family relationships and the dynamic of the family and how when I write characters, you write a bio, you dig into their background, right? And their history, and you figure out, why is this person like this? Who were their parents? How did they grow up? What happened to them? Was there a tragedy? Was there something that they needed to accomplish? And so that's really like one of my biggest themes is about family dynamics and how one turbulent thing can change the trajectory and change the dynamic forever. And what I want to do is to have my readers just feel this anguish and feel in their hearts some compassion for these characters. And that's how I write my books. That's how I dive into them. And I cry while I'm writing a scene that's sad and upsetting or whatever. Like, I am right there with them. And that's really, in my opinion, the only way that the reader can go in there too. So darker story than Summer's Blood, but very, very fascinating to me how these characters figured out how to get out of this mess. And I always tell people, I like Hollywood endings. I don't know about you, but I like a happy Hollywood ending. And so whatever people are like, is she going to be okay? And I'm like, don't worry. I will make sure. We say she's got a friend in a high place.
There you go. Right? Whatever works, right? Whatever gets you to that happily ever after. Absolutely. And I'm sure that once you have that book ready to launch, you're going to have a really fun launch party to go along with that. So I think that'll be a blast. I'm really excited for everything that you got going right now. If there is someone that's out there, and this is the beginning of 2026, someone who is going to say, this is the year that I finally step forward and get my stuff put together and out there into the world, what is something that you would recommend that they do? Like, I know that they need to take a look at your website because you have it mapped out in such a really good, clean way that really speaks to your own experience in marketing. So, and it's also not very busy at all. It's a very clean looking site that will, I think, would grab a lot of attention. And I like seeing that it was kept up in terms of updating and everything. I even see like the copyright is already a 2026. So like that's paying attention to detail right there. So what's one thing that you would recommend that they do?
Well, in terms of the website or creating a brand or just getting started?
Just getting started, saying like, this is the year it finally happens for me.
Okay, so getting started is, and I have so many friends and colleagues and people who I just meet and they find out that I'm an author and they're like, I've always wanted, okay, my advice is you just have to start writing. Mm-hmm. I don't care if it's a journal that you pick up in the morning before life starts to get crazy with family and work, carve out that time, make a commitment to mm-hmm. it and just write, even if it's just writing what you want to do that day or writing some feelings or things that are important to you. Write. You have to just keep doing it. And I know that sounds simple and oh, that's not very complicated, but it really is. It's the hardest thing for people to do is to just sit in their quiet time and focus and feel and put that onto a page. Or if you're going to do it on your PC or your iPad, maybe you live near a beach or you live in a place where you can go that's very your sanctuary. Maybe it's a room in your house. Maybe it's outside. Find that sanctuary and connect with your feelings and your soul and come just, even if it's three sentences, a page. I have writer's block too, like everybody else. And I always write like 500 words of whatever, knowing it's not going to be used, but there's always something, a kernel in there that can be used. And that's what happens mm-hmm. when you keep writing and you go back to it and you say, wow, there's a story in there that I wasn't even thinking about. And that's how that creative process starts to happen in that, because you also do the same thing. But yeah, that's what I'd say. Just write every day.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And your website is adelroice.com, correct?
Adelroice.com. All of my books are on there. You can buy the books that are released. If you're interested in the story of Slipper Girl, you can also read the first two chapters. They're on there. You just have to sign up for my Reader's Club. It's really easy. But the book will be out the 1st of March. But everything else you can find on adelroice.com.
Excellent. And I'm telling you, this is what you need to do when it comes to deciding that this is the year you're going to get the work out there. This is the year you're going to be a published author. You can manifest that, but at the same time, you still have to sit down at your chair. You still have to do the work. You still have to get it out there. That is everything that Adele has been doing, and she has been able to get these books out there while still running her own business. This is something that a lot of people have it in them to do. And I really hope that you have taken the initiative to learn from people like Adele and are applying that to your own life, your own work, and you are making that commitment to yourself and to your hopeful readers and getting those works out there. I really hope that this is the time that you finally step up and say, this is the year I am going to get my work out there. This is the year I'm going to be a published author. Make it happen, and make it happen as soon as you can, because in these crazy times, we need your ideas, your vision, your stories now more than ever. So for Adele Royce, this is George Soroy saying to all of you, ever upward, and I will see you next week.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Excelsior Journeys. I hope it was both inspiring and entertaining. Special thanks to Zach Comtois for providing new music for the intro and outro. please take a moment to leave a rate and review on Apple Podcasts. And if you enjoy the show, please share it with your friends and subscribe to your platform of choice by going to hesgotit.com/podcasts. While there, you can also fill out the application to be a guest, inquire about sponsorship opportunities, and click on the Buy Me a Coffee link if you wish to give your support to the show. All interaction is very much appreciated. If you have a question, comment, or suggestion for the show, please direct it to George@hesgotit.com.